Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 121 for the weekend starting 6 February 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like computer virus spreads to humans.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about Vodacom's third quarter numbers. We also speculate about Microsoft's acquisition of a stake in Cyanogen, and we have a look at Andy Hadfield's new startup for good.
Also, we talk about Google setting up competition with Uber and then the future of transport.
Before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Nice to be recording on a Saturday for a change. Nice and relaxed.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's a rush to get it done, eh?
Indeed. Anyway, there's lots to chat about. I think especially on the international scene this week, there's been some interesting developments. But before we get there, let's kick off, I think, with a brief chat about Vodacom's numbers. I think it was one of the bigger local stories this week, and that was their third financial quarter to the year, or for the 3 months rather, ended 31 December 2014, and not looking very good. I think the company's under a bit of pressure. I think not only Vodacom, but companies across the sector and across the economy are under pressure with the state of the economy. But I think some particular pressures coming onto Vodacom specifically from the lower termination rates we've seen introduced this year.
Yeah.
We've seen their... normalized revenues falling by 1.1% year on year, and their service revenues coming down even more sharply, despite adding millions of customers. In fact, 5.1 million customers year on year. So strong growth in the customer line, but it's not translating into the revenue and earnings line, and that must be concerning for Vodacom. Certainly, they're investing a lot in their network at the moment, rolling out 3G and 4G infrastructure. But it's a tough environment out there, and the decline in mobile termination rates has certainly hit them, as has the increase in the levels of competition in the market. But I think, we're seeing it across the board. The real pressure is coming from... is really coming from this weak economy that we're in at the moment, and it seems like it's going to get tougher, what with all the power cuts we're having now, and the problems with Eskom, and... Etc. So the country's in a bit of a squeeze. But Shamil Yusuf, the CEO of Vodacom, describing their third quarter numbers as challenging, or the quarter is challenging rather. It's going to be interesting to see how the other operators deal with it this year. I think Vodacom has actually managed to weather the storm that we're seeing in this industry better than some of its rivals, particularly MTN, which has been through and continues to go through retrenchment processes. Vodacom hasn't gone through any sort of mass retrenchments, but these latest numbers must be concerning for them.
Yeah, certainly, and like you said, the blackouts we have is certainly not making it easy. And when the big boys start to feel the pain, then we know that we're in for a serious thinking time on how we're going to fix this.
Indeed. But before we get too depressed, maybe we should chat about some of the interesting international stuff that's been happening over the last week. And the first one that really grabbed my attention, and maybe I've been allowing my imagination to run away with me a bit on the story, but Microsoft, the news that Microsoft through another vehicle is acquiring a minority stake in a company called Cyanogen Inc., which is the company that's that has either recently listed or is about to list. I forget which it is. They're developers of Android software. I'm not sure the best way to describe
it. Cyanogen, I would say it's a modded installation, or
that's how they started. They started really with as a bunch of geeks taking Android and really messing with it and providing alternative or custom ROMs, if you like.
They call themselves a community operating system.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So they take Android and they modify it for different devices. So if you've got an Android device, there's a good chance that you'd be able to install a version of CyanogenMod on your device. And they've made it very easy to install these days. In fact, you just have to visit their website and run an auto installer. In the old days, you had to go really jump through some technical hoops
to get
it right and read through how-tos and that sort of thing. But it's become a lot easier. You actually just go to their website and say, would you like to install this on your device? You click yes and it does it for you.
It's become very user-friendly. Yeah. I remember bricking a few devices trying to get CyanogenMod to my own device.
I have a Samsung Galaxy S3 lying around here somewhere that no longer even switches on because I managed to mess it up so badly.
But I mean, isn't this the dream that we all had when we started hearing about the first kind of smartphone operating system, the idea that you can install many different operating systems on a single device or many different flavors of it, and it's giving users just another or advanced users at least, you know, a really great operating system on a device you already own. It's nice to see that we're finally at this place where we can do this kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you've played with the CyanogenMod, and it's actually pretty cool. They do some pretty amazing work, actually. It's quite similar to the native Android, experience, vanilla Android. I like it a lot. But interesting, Microsoft buying a stake in them. Why? I mean, what on earth could Microsoft be thinking? I mean, Android is a direct competitor to their Windows Phone platform. And this really got my mind racing this week. I mean, what is Microsoft up to? And reading some speculation online and sort of thinking further about it, it made me wonder, and maybe I'm overstepping the mark here with the speculation, but I think it's worth throwing out there. Could Microsoft potentially at some point make Android its own effectively? Because remember, Android is an open source operating system. It means anyone can take it and develop around it and do stuff with it. Could Microsoft at some point in the future take Android, effectively strip out the Google services, and put its own set of cloud-based services in there? So Bing Maps, Office, which is now available for Android, and a whole bunch of their other services, and really make it a Microsoft Android platform. And could they, in effect, snatch Android away from Google at some point by doing that? Is that even feasible? Is that a possibility?
I think it's very feasible, but I would almost come from another angle and say potentially what could also happen here is that they could use these geniuses at CyanogenMod to perhaps do some things for the Windows Mobile platform.
Yeah.
That would be my kind of thinking, coming it from another angle, simply because I think Microsoft has a lot of extra interest in the operating system already.
Mm.
I don't know if they will just let it go, unless there's a different product line coming up that they're trying to bridge the divide, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, they're only taking a very small minority stake in CyanogenMod, so it's not exactly that they're going to have any say over what CyanogenMod does. They're almost like going to be a passive investor. So from that perspective, it's even more curious.
Maybe they get access to some information.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just a case of Microsoft wanting to, I don't know, have its legs in all possible fields. Not sure that's the best phrase, but you know, it's an interesting one. And CyanogenMod, you know, clearly has been trying to distance itself from Google over the last little while. Certainly, in the research that I've been doing, they have been looking at, you know, moving away from Google. In fact, they've been making noises that they'd be a better administrator of the Android operating system than Google would be, which is quite a statement to make, quite arrogant, I think, as well. But
so if CyanogenMod becomes its own operating system independent of Android...
Independent of Google services. Yeah.
But as an Android-based operating system, you can sell this as a device with CyanogenMod operating system on, you know, without having to do an aftermarket fit. So Microsoft could potentially, or any business could potentially sell that device with CyanogenMod.
Yes.
From the factory.
But it's the integration of the Microsoft services that intrigues me the most. And, you know, it's very clear now that we're dealing with a very different Microsoft than we were just a couple of years ago. Just in the last few weeks, Office apps, including Outlook. In fact, Outlook in the last few weeks has come to iOS. The Office apps have been there for a bit longer. Outlook has also come in beta form to the Android devices as well. I installed it the other day, but it's a bit unstable at this stage, so I got rid of it again. But Microsoft has become platform agnostic. It's no longer Windows. It's we'll develop for where the users are.
Yeah.
And so It, 5 years ago, it would be, well, we're going to develop for Windows because that's our platform. Now it's, well, we'll develop for iOS because that's where the users are. We'll develop for Android because that's where the users are. Perhaps this acquisition of a stake in Cyanogen Inc. is a similar, there's a similar sort of thinking around it. The users are using Android. Maybe we need to have a play in the Android space. They haven't, as far as I know, they haven't killed off Nokia's Android phones. Remember the Nokia Android devices that we introduced, the low-cost devices that we introduced a couple of years ago? As far as I know, those are still around and still being developed. Is this a tacit admission, perhaps, by Microsoft that they need to play in more than one operating system, given that Windows Phone hasn't exactly set the world alight?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It seems very plausible, especially with the fact that these guys have been able to pull it off successfully already. So Microsoft just stepping in and putting their stamp on it potentially, or trying to get a piece of that pie.
Yeah, and maybe it's a statement that Microsoft believes its cloud services are now an equal of Google's. I think that up to a certain point, recently I wouldn't have considered using any of Microsoft's online services, certainly not its Bing search service. I probably still wouldn't use the Bing search service.
Neither would I.
But a lot of their other online services have improved. Their mapping has gotten a lot better. I don't know if you've used Microsoft Office on the web recently, but it is massively improved on where it was. I'd say 6 months ago.
Compared to Google Docs, I haven't used it. I only use Office 365.
It's like a full. Let me just bring it up on my PC to show you. I can't remember the word address. Office 365.
So it's essentially a full replication of what you'd find as Word on your desktop, but hosted in a browser.
Exactly. When I started using this a while ago, it was perhaps a year ago. It was really slow and buggy, and it was certainly no match for Google Drive and Google Docs. But it's certainly come a long way, and if you've got a reasonable broadband connection, it's actually a very good platform now. It looks just like the desktop version of Word or Excel or whatever you're used to. I'm just going to have a quick login here, so you can have a.
Now that you have an option of these type of services, which are so handy to use, I find myself still in many cases leaning back towards like the Google Docs platform. I don't know why it is. I think maybe it's because I've been using the services for so long. I can use them reliably. When I look at something like Office 365, like Office Online, I still prefer to use a desktop version over the browser version. But the browser version obviously has a lot of benefits over having it offline.
Yes. Yeah. So you just go to office.live.com, and there we go. So I've clicked on
Word.
It looks just like Word. So let's actually open up a template, because that'll give us a little bit of complexity. Let's open one of the picture.
Now, how have you found the speed to be? Because with Google's being a lot less graphic intensive, I mean, there's a lot of
It's a little slow if it's loading a big document, but in terms of editing, once it's up, it's snappy. It's no issues at all. So there we go. It's loading the document, and there it's up. And as you'll see, impressive. The interface running in Chrome on a Mac is fine. It looks just like the desktop version. Once it's up, it's snappy. It's like using desktop software.
And this was an important move for Microsoft, simply because the only way corporates are going to move to a cloud platform like this if they have. If they have the Microsoft ecosystem, because many corporates still are heavily entrenched with using Office Exchange at least, and this will make it a lot easier for them to transition to the cloud without changing their ecosystem.
No, it's impressive. Just compared to 6 months ago, where this was at, compared to now, it's chalk and cheese. They've done a hell of a lot of work. I think they've been given a huge fright by Google. Because I think a lot of companies have started to look at Google as an alternative, I think they've been given a wake up, and it's looking fantastic. The comparison with the desktop is it looks like the same thing basically. In fact, this seamless integration between the two. There's a big button here at the top, open in Word. Click on that. I'm sure it'll
launch Word.
Yeah, launch application. There we go. Let's have a look. See how it looks compared to. It's now firing up.
So this is part of your Office 365 subscription.
It is.
To get that online access.
Yeah, which is $950 a month.
No, a year.
Yeah.
I've got a monthly subscription. I should change it to a yearly.
Yeah, you save. You get 2 months free if you get the year subscription. Yeah, but it's worth it. I mean, it's you know, it's not that expensive, considering what you're getting. It includes Outlook. It's looking pretty slick. Tell us what you think. I mean, we're keen to get your views as well. What do you think Microsoft's play is with CyanogenMod? Drop us a mail at info@techcentral.co.za. We're keen to hear from you.
Yeah, we did go a bit off topic there, but I think CyanogenMod is certainly going to... We're going to be seeing a lot more about that name in the future.
So let's stick with the international stories for a moment longer. And Refat, you also had a look at this week. This interesting news that Google may be setting up in competition with Uber.
Yes.
Uber, of course, this... how do you describe them? This
the best taxi service on earth.
Yeah, except they don't call it a taxi service for regulatory reasons, I think.
Sure.
The Lyft sharing service. Yeah. And, you know, amazing company. They're valued at more than $40 billion. Mm, They've come from nowhere in a couple of years. And now Google is suggesting that they may be eyeing the space. But, of course, Google is also a player in autonomous self-driving cars. And the big question is, what happens if you marry the two?
You
wanted to chat a bit about this.
I use Uber quite a lot because I find it's a really useful service, especially when I travel, go to Cape Town from the airport to wherever you need to be. It's the easiest way to get around.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've proved it in my own usage cases over and over, and I really enjoy using it. But now if you take something like an Uber service and you put a driverless or autonomous vehicle into the equation, The concept thereof is very interesting now, because you obviously don't have a driver to pay, so the only costs that now get associated with your ride is potentially the fuel that you use and the service for the car. And then one step beyond that, potentially having we've seen these services around the world, but you don't own a vehicle, you just call one when you need it, or you use one as you need it. And I think this the fact that Google is looking at this, their engineers must have been thinking about this when they put the autonomous vehicle together, thinking how do we best capitalize on the fact that we don't have a driver in this car. Nobody wants to buy one necessarily, or people may not want to buy one, but we can rent them out or Lyft share them out. And the fact that Uber's already showed the world that they can, that's a viable business model with the driver in the vehicle. Google must have realized, or I'm sure they've realized, that this is the next logical step in the driverless vehicle era.
And I mean, if you think about the potential of it, it could transform transportation and change the way cities work.
Yeah,
potentially, if you can get these autonomous vehicles to actually work without crashing and causing problems.
Sure,
which is a big if. But imagine it: you fire up an app on your smartphone, order up an autonomous vehicle. 2 minutes later, a self-driven car arrives at the curb side next to you. You hop in. The car asks you, "Where would you like to go, sir?" And you tell the voice recognition system in the car, or it'll be on Google servers, "Oh, I don't know. I'd like to go to the Cape Town Convention Center, please." And off the autonomous car drives you there. Off you go. Brilliant.
Well, we've seen this.
It could be revolutionary.
I mean, I almost have no doubt that it's going to happen. If we look at the revolution of robotics and artificial intelligence, I mean, there doesn't have to be artificial intelligence, but, you know, intelligent electronics or intelligent devices. This is very plausible. We're not looking at a movie saying, "Oh, this is in the future." We're seeing examples of this happening now. These cars are driving around now. It's just a matter of
testing, though. I mean, I was in Silicon Valley 2 years ago, and I saw Google testing some of these autonomous vehicles. But there was someone sitting behind the steering wheel, ready to take over at a moment's notice if something went wrong.
For sure. I think the bad link in the chain here will always be a human driver. Because on the roads we only have autonomous vehicles, they are programmed not to bump into each other. They've got distance control. They've got speed control. So they intelligently monitor the surroundings.
Yeah.
Where human, you focus. If your focus is lost for a second, you can drive into anything.
I mean, are we going to trust the software in this thing enough to to know that this thing is not going to crash into
Good question. But we already trust software with so many things in our lives.
True.
You know,
autopilot and aircraft.
Exactly.
But again, in an aircraft, there's always a pilot standing by in case something goes wrong.
Yeah, for sure. But I think if a vehicle is programmed, I mean, you'll never really break the speed barrier, the speed limits, because you know, these things are going to be programmed.
Yeah.
So
your
accident rate is probably going to plummet as well, because nobody's making the bad decision. It's going to be software making decisions based on the surroundings.
Yeah.
And if something crashes, the car will come to a stop.
But I think you're right, though. I think the autonomous vehicles, if they do take off, are going to take off in this sort of ride-sharing type of environment, the Uber-type model. Because I don't see ordinary consumers necessarily buying these things. I mean, I think a lot of people actually like to drive.
Yeah.
People who own, if you own a car, you want to actually drive it. You don't want to sit in the back seat and let it drive you.
Exactly.
Maybe I'm just being a boy, but maybe women feel differently about it. But, I want to drive my own car.
You can certainly capitalize on.
But certainly in that environment. Sorry, certainly in that environment. You know, if I was traveling or whatever, and I needed to get around quickly, I'd absolutely get an autonomous vehicle and let it drive me to where I want to go.
Yeah, exactly. You can do some work in the back seat. I think there's many applications for it. And that's, I think that's going to be the most difficult thing to go to a society where we've got fully automated vehicles. People want to drive. There's joy in driving that. You'll never get away from that. So maybe it's a matter of cities. I mean, you can look at a big city like London, where they've got a problem with congestion already.
Yes.
If you introduce this there, it'll make a lot of sense, and it'll help traffic in the city a lot as well. Not so much in South Africa, where we still have lots of distances between the places we genuinely want to go, and we want to drive. You know, we've got roads, distance on our roads at least.
Now the next thing we need to do is that these things need to be fully electric, of course.
Oh yeah.
And once the battery's running low, they automatically go to some depot and recharge themselves. Drive in and recharge automatically.
And you can totally see that we could be in a society where this happens, because we've got these milestones we're seeing all over the place. I mean, look at what BMW is doing with Schneider and setting up these. Yes. So, I mean, these cars can go there. And, you know, we're getting there step by step, I think. It's just going to be a matter of time.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I love it.
It is, yeah. I just want a flying car now.
Yeah,
the stuff they, you know, if you look at the sort of predictions that futurists came up with in the mid 20th century, it's like, this is what the world's going to look like around 2015, and flying cars and all sorts of stuff.
Well, look at what we're doing with drones. I mean, the fact that if you look at the technology that's driving a drone to do what it's able to do, you know, whether it's military or just photography purposes. Combine that type of technology with a vehicle that's autonomous and you can call with an app.
Yeah.
You know, these cars could have those rotary propellers, or it could have some other propulsion technology that gets it up in the air. It's because the technology is being, we're building the foundations for this technology, right?
Exciting
stuff. We're actually seeing it, yeah.
Exciting stuff. Anyway, it would be fascinating to see what Google comes up with. Cool. What else do we have to talk about this week? I think let's come back to some local stuff. And I had a fascinating chat, it was last week already, although we ran the story this week, with Andy Hadfield, the tech entrepreneur who was behind the now defunct startup called Real Time Wine.
Yes.
I think many people know it was a business-to-consumer way of buying wine online. He's come up with a new project called For Good. He's working with the brainchild of both him and a chap called Garth Jaffet, who some of our listeners may know. Garth Jaffet is a medical doctor who started the non-governmental organization called Source City, which is also a television series back in the 1990s, and he runs an organization called Heartlines, which is also an NGO that's been involved in the production of a number of TV shows and movies. I think the most well-known of their movies was the production Nothing for Mahala, which came out a few years ago, in which Ronnie Aptek, the founder of Internet Solutions, was involved in. And so Garth and Andy have come up with this new website called For Good. It's a for-profit website, startup, and doing some really interesting stuff. The idea behind it is really to be a facilitator, if you like, between givers of charity, of money or goods or time, to charitable organizations or NGOs that need it. The idea is that, Garth said to me that, you know, if I challenge you to name five NGOs or charities in South Africa, you'd probably struggle to actually come up with a list of five.
Yeah.
Yet there are tens of thousands of them registered in South Africa. You know, and these organizations aren't getting exposure, but they're doing lots of good work behind the scenes. And they take all the money they get and they don't plow it into marketing for themselves. They're plowing it into the causes. Yeah. So one of the ideas behind For Good is that it will actually facilitate this flow of services and money and charitable services, whatever you want to call it, from individuals and companies to these charitable organizations that are doing the good work on the ground, and actually get exposure to them through the website. While also, it almost creates more of a frictionless environment for giving. And it's a really cool idea, and it's well worth going to have a look at it. The website is forgood.co.za. They've already signed up one big corporate who's getting involved. I can't name them yet, unfortunately. I think they're going to be naming the corporate soon, but they're going off to the business sector first, and they're it's a really cool concept. So go and have a look at it. Forgood.co.za is the website, and I think a great initiative, and I wish Andy and Garth all the luck with it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is a different take on the crowdsourcing platform almost, and it's, like you said, exposing all the charities that need benefactors, essentially. And also, I think it'll also create a lot of rotation in the industry, because at the moment, if a corporate's got a NGO that they support or charity that they support, they generally don't change, because, you know, they kind of... Who else do you go to? I mean, we don't generally like to support smaller guys or bigger guys, but this actually makes it very transparent. I like it.
It's a great initiative. So
well done, guys.
Excellent. I think that covers the news for this week, if I'm not mistaken. So let's move on to our regular features. Let's start with our winner and loser, as usual. I think our winner this week has to be IBM for announcing this week that they're opening one of the IBM Research Lab in Johannesburg. It's the second, I think, research lab in Africa after they opened one up in Kenya back in 2013. It's a $70 million investment, and it's being done in conjunction with Wits University. And it looks like they're going to be doing some interesting research there around big data and sort of using big data in cities and in science and other things. Looks like a cool initiative, good investment from IBM. I think some rare good news this week. In light of all the load shedding and everything else that's been going on. They are our winner this week, IBM, for making that commitment to South Africa and investment in the research lab. If you're looking for more details on that, the story is up on Tech Central. Our loser this week, we had a bit of a debate about this, but you know, given the extent of it, this load shedding that's happened this week, I think our loser this week has to be Eskom, which, by the way, reportedly managed to take down Internet Solutions Randview data center in Randburg. This week, not quite sure what the details of that are, but a bit of a catastrophe.
Sure,
but Eskom. I don't think we're going to make them our loser every week this year. It'd be quite easy to do that, but we had to make them loser at least once. So Eskom, you're our loser this week for the mess you've got us into. Well done, guys.
Yeah, thanks for nothing.
Indeed. Right. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So the pick, it's a game that was developed by some people. I don't actually want to name them, because I think it might. They haven't officially launched this game, but it's available on iOS and Android. It's called Zoo Maze. And it's a very interesting take on a zoo puzzle. And if I can just, I'm just quickly going to start it up and show Duncan on the screen. But essentially, you've got an objective of reaching an endpoint on this maze. There's little bubbles like scattered around the maze. But the trick with this game is that the map keeps zooming out. So if you don't eat your little coins or your little circles, the map will keep zooming out until you can't see anything anymore. So if I just let it stand for a second. So, I mean, now I need to quickly make a plan to get what I need to get.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interesting take on a time-based... puzzle game.
Yeah,
it's been very addictive. I've been playing it. Like I said, it's not. They're still working on. There's some bugs in it.
Yeah,
that's why I don't want to name them. But it's called Zoo Maze. You can go check it out. It's quite addictive, and I like, you know, the sounds and the there's quite a few humorous captions in there. I can say Zoo Maze, nice game to play.
Cool, go check it out. So it's Android and iOS.
Android and iOS. Yeah.
Cool. I think I might have mentioned in a previous podcast, but I'm absolutely loving the iPad game called Monument Valley.
Yes.
Have you played it?
No, I haven't played it. You've told me about it.
You must get it. It's awesome. It's awesome.
No, yeah, okay.
I'll get it on your iPad, though. It's really, really good. I think it runs on iPhone, but I'm not sure.
No, I'll get on the iPad.
Get on the iPad. It's really cool. Yeah. Great. My pick this week is an Android app called Gentle Alarm. I really don't like waking up in a start in the morning. So I like a slow start. If some sort of chainsaw sounding alarm goes off next to my head at 7 in the morning. I tend to have a grumpy start to the day. So I did a bit of research, and I found this app called Gentle Alarm. It costs around about 30 Rand, but I figured I just took a bet on it and downloaded it, and it's really cool. It is the most full-featured alarm clock for a smartphone I've ever seen. You can customize it this way to Sunday. It's only available for Android. But it really lets you do anything from pre-alarms to how long the fade-in of your alarm is for. So you could fade it in over half an hour. So you can download all sorts of cool sort of background sounds, music. You can select music, you can open apps, you can open internet music streams, you can do just about anything with this thing. I've downloaded this particular sound of a boat rowing through a lake, which is very gentle and peaceful, and I faded in over 10 minutes, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, that's pretty handy. Yeah, you can do it over a long period like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it's completely customizable. You can do it over whatever period you want. Nice. Vast array of sound effects and options available. It's almost like an if this then that type of scenario.
Oh, nice.
It hasn't got the world's best interface, but it's a very full featured app. So if you're an Android user and you really do not like the default alarm clock on your Android phone, do check this out. It's I think it's worth the $30 that I put down for it. So have a look. Gentle Alarm for Android. Excellent. Well, I think that's the show for today. As always, if you've got any feedback, send us a mail, info@techcentral.co.za. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, from Rachel and myself, take care. Ciao.
Ciao.